John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
We head toward the fourth weekend, and of course, a chance for a lot of people to take some time off and all that stuff. But we got to be on duty here because there's lots going on in the National Football League, even though it's supposed to be a quiet time. And joining us on Scored is Will Brinson from CBS Sports. And Will, I'm going to start off here, and we're going to hit a lot of different topics, but I'm kind of wondering, are we seeing a beginning of a trend that might happen that kind of carries into some things we're seeing in the NBA and baseball? And the trend I'm looking at is that, you know, obviously you have players that are concerned about the virus, concerned about trying to come back. We just saw that Chris Jones has said, if I'm not paid $20.1 million, which is his value, and I don't see him getting it because, again, you don't know what the cap's going to be next year, he's threatening to sit out the season. Then you have Devontae Freeman. He turned down $3 million on a one-year deal from Seattle because he wanted to stick to his numbers. And now I throw a third name in there, Jadeveon Clowney, who's been, he wanted originally $22-23 million. He dropped it down to 17. He's not really even countering any offers, and there's not many offers. And I'm wondering, is he now one of the three of many that may just decide to sit out the season? He talked to Josina Anderson yesterday and said that, I hope to get something done by the start of the season, meaning he's thinking maybe it's going to take through training camp to get something. Are we seeing a new trend with some NFL players that have big money that might give up the money and miss the season?
Yeah, I think, those cases might be a little unique, but not too dissimilar with Clowney. I mean, it seems to me, John, that what his plan is, I mean, I think he sort of settled into the, all right, I've made some pretty good money. I'm frustrated by my market. I'm frustrated by the pandemic situation. I think he's basically played chicken, with the global situation and trying to see if he can get to training camp. And then you have a team that says, all right, we think we're pretty good, but we need some pass rush help, or maybe an injury happens and somebody gets desperate and they want to pay him. And then he can go and get that price tag that he's wanted. I think, unfortunately the reality is, teams have already, for large portion of teams have already set their roster and set their budgets, and aren't going to want to make a big splash on a guy like Clowney. But I do think he'll find a home. I just think he doesn't want to sign up now and have to worry about reporting on time, worry about reporting and being there right on time when he realizes that he can sort of kick it down the road a bit and probably isn't desperate for that influx of cash. Chris Jones, I feel for the guy because he wanted to get paid last offseason and seemed like he was contemplating making a little bit of a stink about it and then just ultimately decided that he was going to be, he was going to be quiet. He was going to be, a good soldier, so to speak, and go in there and just, play his tail off and hope that he got rewarded by the Chiefs for that. And they ultimately just don't want to give him that long-term deal and would rather, use him on the tag. And I don't know if he's going to sit out that, Le'Veon Bell, who he cited, on Twitter, set out the second tag after playing on the first one. I don't know if Chris Jones, feels like he can do that and to pass on all that guaranteed money that he'd be getting on this one-year deal. But, yeah, I mean, I think that players who have earned substantial cash flow already are probably more likely to sit out. And look, at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of cases of guys who, may have situations at home. I mean, you hear that with Ryan Zimmerman and Ian Desmond, and on the baseball front, they cited, whether it's for differing reasons, personal matters that led them to believe they shouldn't be out on the field. Those guys have made a lot of money over the course of their careers, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have NFL players. We've seen some NBA guys do it as well. I think it was somebody for the Lakers said, look, I've got a family situation where one of my children has maybe it's a respiratory illness or whatever it is. I mean, there's going to be people like that in the NFL who ultimately have to make a decision about whether they want to put their families at risk by playing this season. And so, yeah, I think we could see some folks sit out.
Yeah, and that's what I'm wondering about. Like in the case of Chris Jones, and neither side is wrong on this. Okay, Chris rightfully has just watched DeForest Buckner get $20.1 million on a five-year deal. So he got 5 years, 105, and Chris Jones is close to being to him as you can find. And so knowing he's playing on a team that has a $20.8 million defensive end in Frank Clark, you'd think, okay, well, I should get close to this Frank Clark number, even though he's a defensive end, but also I should be able to get the DeForest Buckner. So he's right in that value. But here's where the Chiefs have the problem, and they're right in this. You don't know what the cap's going to be next year. And you also need to find a deal with Patrick Mahomes, and you know that number is going to be $40 million. But if the cap's going to stay where it is or drop because of the lack of revenue, because of, you know, you don't know who's going to be in the stands, and you don't know all these different things, what you're looking at is that, okay, can you really do a $20.1 million deal? And I'd say no, because at this stage, you know, they're tight against the cap this year. They you know, can't clear up a room next year because, again, you don't know what the cap's going to be. And so it's like I'm starting to wonder, are these players going to – it's like, okay, well, I can't be fined because I'm a franchise player, in the case of Clowney, unsigned. So I'll just wait this out, and I'll see where it goes at the end of training camp.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a great point, John. And, you know, the other thing – I wonder if Chris Jones just sort of thought about this too. Is like, if you play this year on the franchise tag, what – you know, you can – and you don't, I know he doesn't want to do it, but what's interesting about that is, and this applies to Dak Prescott as well, and or anybody that's playing that's on a franchise tag right now. You know, if you're, you know, you if that salary cap ends up, you know, contracting or staying right where it is, you know, you're going to be getting at bare minimum 120% of what you got this year. That's fine if the salary cap grows for these teams. But, you know, if you're Dak Prescott or Chris Jones, you play 1 year, and then the Chiefs or the Cowboys, respectively, Cowboys or Chiefs, respectively, want to franchise tag you again, it may be even more difficult. It's going to hurt their roster because of that 120% that they would get next year on that second franchise tag. So if it's me, I may be willing to sort of push the envelope a bit. And certainly, I think, you know, you'll see him skip training camp and these off-season activities, Chris Jones, that is. If he hadn't signed his franchise tender. I think that's one of the things these teams need to think about too. Like, if I'm Jerry Jones with the Dak stuff, I'm getting the deal done in the next 15 days because, and frankly, I'm going to, you know, figure out a way to take as big a cap hit this year as we can afford to take, knowing that next year that cap might end up shrinking and we just don't know what the math is going to do on it because of those fans and because we don't know whether it's going to be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50% of fans in the stands. There's a lot of unknowns out there. So yeah, I think that these players, you're right, may end up being a little more cautious, but I would sort of be doing the long-term math on what might create the most leverage for me if I'm one of those guys on the tag.
On Sunday night, the Sunday news comes out that Cam Newton agrees to a minimum salary deal with incentives to go to the New England Patriots. And, you know, I look at it on the flip side because, again, he, like Jadeveon Clowney and all the other players, can't get physicals. All right. So certainly, I mean, he wants to be a starter. And so now he'll gamble on himself at the minimum salary to be able to go there, compete against Jared Stidham, who the Patriots really like, and see where it goes. But also, if he goes, because, you know, technically, until he gets a physical, they can't approve the contract. And if he fails the physical, even in that, or they decide they don't want him in July, then he's still going to be in the same position as he is. But at least he was smart enough to think, okay, here's a chance for me to start, and I'll deal with everything else later.
Yeah, and I think when you really, and I wrote about this for CBSSports.com, but, you know, when you, and one of the questions I think is, like, you know, why wasn't there a market for him? I think you can really go through all the NFL teams and either, you know, either every team, you know, the Panthers released him, you know, the Bears traded for Nick Foles, and then there's like 10 or 12 teams that recently drafted a quarterback in the first or second round, and then there's like 10 or 12 teams who have an established veteran. And then there are like three or four teams, like the Colts and the Bucks, who, you know, signed somebody this offseason. It basically, you know, and I think the problem with Cam is that, unlike Jameis Winston, he didn't want to go somewhere and be a backup for a year and then see if he can get a starting job. He wanted a chance to compete. He's also such a big personality, a former MVP, former number one overall pick, and such a, you know, a great player when he is healthy, that, you know, it's hard if you're the Washington Redskins. Do you want to bring him in with Dwayne Haskins there? Because, you know, that's a big shadow to have looming over Dwayne Haskins. You know, I would assume that Russell Wilson doesn't want Cam Newton backing him up, because if he plays poorly, people are like, well, what do we throw Cam out there? Let's see what he's got. And so I think it really came down to, it's like the Patriots and the Jaguars, and those are the only spots left. It didn't seem like Jacksonville had a lot of interest. They kind of want to they're in this weird limbo where we don't know if they're rebuilding and they kind of want to see what they have in Minshew. And so the Patriots ultimately, you know, were always the team that made the most sense. What I think is fascinating, John, is that it looks to me as if Bill Belichick has been for the past 18 months, maybe even longer, sort of kind of gearing towards having a power run game, and that being the focal point of that offense. I think what they wanted to do if they roll with Stidham is to have it be like 2001 and be a run-heavy team that plays great defense, and you have this quarterback who converts third downs and you know, like friendly third downs, and then makes clutch throws like Tom Brady, the game manager that Tom Brady was when he started his career. And I think since the pandemic came on, Bill Belichick has really decided, okay, look, you know, this is going to be a weird season. There is not going to be a lot of practice. We don't know what we're going to have in the offseason. The easiest way with all this transition we've got going on at the quarterback position to make this team perform well is to just keep it simple, stupid, run the football. You know, they tag Joe Tooney. They clearly have an emphasis on you know, staying potent at the offensive line. And I think he looked at it too. He's like, all right, look, you know, Josh McDaniels has wanted to have a running quarterback for a while. He drafted Tim Tebow at Denver. You know, I think Bill Belichick's kind of wanted to experiment with a running quarterback over the last few years, but Tom Brady just kept playing well. And so now you have Cam Newton, who not only supplements the running game, but he enhances it with his mm-hmm. with his ability to operate in the red zone and to run the football by himself.
Will Brinson, thank you for joining us on Educating Us on Schooled with the Professor.
Hey, anytime, John. Always a pleasure, man.
And you can check that out. It's going to be online at about 4 o'clock on every place that you can get a podcast. And also, we're going to say that you listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we get out the report card.
It's time for the report card with the Professor.
Today we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, we take the anecdotes, we take the social media comments, we take the voices, and we attach a grade to it. Curtis Rogers gives us the report card every day. So, Curtis, what do we have?
Well, John, we were talking about during the break there just the feasibility of college sports happening at the scheduled time. Obviously, college football being the first, up on the docket here for a lot of sports fans in the country. Well, college basketball also kind of figuring out when they're going to get back to it. They normally hold summer workouts around this time of year, but obviously that's not happening at the scale that it normally does. Rick Pitino, now I warn you here, Rick Pitino always a bit of a loose cannon when it comes to college sports. Well, Pitino tweeted out today, he is the head coach now at Iona University, he said, suggestion to the NCAA, push the start of the college basketball season back to January and only play league games, buy some more time for a vaccine to get things under control, although I can't wait to be back on the sidelines, the health of my players and staff is what's really important. John, I believe this is the first head coach in football or basketball that has really spoken up about moving the season back, so how are we grading Rick Pitino saying, hey, like, let's not mess around here. Let's move this back to a time where maybe things are a little more under control.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a D. I mean, again, it's like there's so many people that is like, just let it play out. I mean, the virus is going to dictate what's going to be allowed and what's not going to be allowed. And when you're talking about, you know, basketball in, what, November? It's like it's to push things back. Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about that in October, do it then. But I think that, you know, first you have to see if you're going to have a basketball season at all. Because I know, like, for example, in particularly what's going to be so bad is that, you know, four of the biggest states in the country have major spikes that could ruin everything. And now, you know, like, for example, what is it? I think Arizona State says that they may not be able to reopen school, period. They don't know about that. At least they said that, you know, if they had to make the decision today, that they wouldn't have anybody on campus. And so just let it play out. I give him a D. Because let's put it this way. You know that, you know, he has everything set up. He's always out for himself, right? Nobody else.
Oh, yeah.
That's his nature. And so just let it go.
I do think it's interesting. You look at where Pitino is employed right now, Iona, which is not among the Power Five schools. They are a mid-major. They're a very small school, and their biggest, you know, revenue generator is tickets, and it's people in the seats, and it's the same battle that a lot of small schools are facing right now. do we have a season with no fans in the seats, or do we try and wait this thing out? So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'll give him a C+, just because he did mention that he's looking out for the health of his players, and he's also I think he's close to 70 years old as well. Mm-hmm. So just a weird time in college athletics. Speaking of weird, John, one of the great 4th of July traditions in this country, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, it will still be going on what day is it? Saturday? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time. They will still hold the Hot Dog Eating Contest, but there will be no fans in attendance in Coney Island. John, you a fan of the hot dog eating contest?
Yep, Pat and I watch it every year. Love it.
Nice.
So I'm glad it's going to be able to continue. See that Mike Golic Jr. is going to be involved with the broadcast, so I think that's good. And you hope that they have good spacing, because all you see is spit and saliva and everything else going all over the place, so they better space that out well. But I'm glad it's a live event, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting to watch if you've never watched it before. If you get queasy often, then I suggest not watching it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Joey Chestnut trying to go for his world record of 74 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. He set that in 2018. He's won, I think, like 10 of the last 11. Just a monster eating those hot dogs. But it'll still go on. So how are we grading the hot dog eating contest still happening this
weekend? Yeah, B+. I mean, it's a positive thing. I'm glad they're supporting it. It's it's just a fun event. It's a weird event, but it's a fun event. And at least, it's going to be tough enough, not having some of the fireworks all around. I mean, some will be there, some will not. And, we're missing so much. We're missing the live sports and all that stuff in a lot of ways. But I think this is good. It only takes an hour, and it's fun.
Also on the report card, John, friend of the show, Andrew Brandt, he appeared on Ross Tucker's podcast and was asked about Cam Newton and his fit with the Patriots roster. And Andrew Brandt actually not very bullish on it, going as far as saying he doesn't think Cam Newton will even make the Patriots roster.
I don't think it's that big a deal. And what's a big deal is the name, and this goes to sort of free agency in general. People jump at the names rather than the players, and sort of the former MVP doesn't really mean much to me unless the former's like 6 months ago. Typical Patriots waited till the market had dropped. I think we all need to be cognizant that Cam Newton, not one, not two, not three, 4 months, which is what, 125, 30 days, and no one signed him. So that tells you what people thought of Cam Newton, including his coach for 10 years, who's in Washington, who traded for his backup. So I guess compared to Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer, okay. But I guess my take is I'm not convinced he A, starts, and even B, makes the team. And I say that because of my expertise, the business of sports, the way I read the reports, forget about all the incentives, that it's kind of a make good contract.
So, John, how are we grading Andrew Brandt's opinion on Cam Newton, saying that he doesn't think he could even make the Patriots roster?
That's a C-. I don't agree with it, because I think he can. I mean, you can't have any times in the 40s because you can't work him out. You can't give him a physical. And, it's one of those one-sided deals for the Patriots, because here they were able to get him to commit, even though, again, that contract has to have the physical to be approved. They can back out of it at any time. But I do, particularly with their conversation with Ben Volen, know that the Patriots wanted to get some kind of a running offense. And you heard Will Brinson brought up some good points today on School with a Professor, that it's like, hey, in a year like this, it may be simpler just to have a simple offense, run the football, something they've done in 2001. Don't try to pass it too much. I think he makes the team, and I think he ends up starting, but don't discount the fact that they do like what they have in Jarrett Stidham. They think he can be pretty good. They think so. We don't know anything about it. And, you couldn't bring Newton into Washington, because that's going to take away from, get the scared development of Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah, I'm going to give Andrew Brandt a D on this one, just because you don't bring in somebody like Cam Newton and just give them a flyer as a tryout. Like, this is somebody who, when healthy, is still a good quarterback. Mm-hmm. The problem is he hasn't been healthy in a couple of years, and that's been the biggest hindrance to success in the NFL. And I think Bill Belichick, he has been the kind of coach that has taken flyers on guys that are looking for bounce backs, that are looking to kind of resurrect their career. I mean, he did it with Randy Moss. Probably that's the most notable example, you know, back in 2007. So this could be another instance of that, and I think Cam Newton brings a level of excitement to that Patriots organization that they definitely lost when Tom Brady left. And I think, you know, they're going to be, I think they're still going to be reckoned with in the AFC East this year. They may not win the division, but they're still going to be a force out there. That is it for today's report card.
Okay, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we go on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710 to text your questions in. Because remember, we're not going to be back until Monday. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
This is your chance to get the text questions on the Busy Hard Seltzer text line to 710-710 before this long weekend we get to take off. Curtis and I will not be back until Monday. No show Saturday, no show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But we are taking your text questions now. Curtis, what do we have?
John, let's start off with a 4th of July question. They want to know, from the 425, they want to know, John, of these foods, which one would you fare best in an eating contest? Hot dogs, pie, or wings?
Probably hot dogs. The wings would be too spicy. Don't like too much spice. So I think, you know, the hot dogs, I wouldn't really want to challenge myself too much because, again, it's like got to keep the weight down and keep, you know, because I don't get a chance to walk as much and stay in better shape. So I was hoping to walk today, but it's now continuing to rain. So that's not going to probably happen. But I'd say hot dogs.
Yeah. From the let's go with the 253. They want to know, John, do you think Bradley McDougald could be a trade candidate for Seattle, depending on how Marquise Blair develops?
Could. Yeah, he's a good enough player. I mean, and if you have a team in desperate need of a safety, I mean, again, one of the things that's going to happen this year, there's going to be more injuries because, you know, the guys have been on their own now since the end of the season. And, you know, we saw in 2011 when that happened, you know, ACLs, Achilles injuries, they spike and they're going to have more guys hurt. And so if, you know, you start having starters get knocked out, you know, like that, I mean, he could be. But again, I think right now he serves so well on this team that you don't want to give up talent like that.
Some news regarding the NHL's restart. TSN up in Canada reports that the two hub cities for the NHL playoffs will be Edmonton and Toronto. So they're keeping it north of the border for the NHL playoffs. No word yet on which of those cities will host the Stanley Cup Finals, but it would appear as though they have settled on those two cities, John.
Yeah, kind of curious because, again, it's like, okay, that's interesting, but how much on the back and forth can you do in Canada? I know it would be the same for getting Canadian players down to the U.S. and U.S. I don't know how they're going to try to work that out, but apparently, you know, they decided to work it out.
Yeah, very, very interesting. From the 253, they want to know who is the best remaining free agent quarterback after Cam Newton is now signed.
Well, I mean, Colin Kaepernick, for one. Then you start to really struggle a little bit because, again, you're looking at, like, Blake Bortles and guys like that. So I'd have to say Colin Kaepernick's the next best one out there.
253 wants to know, how much cap room will the Seahawks have after signing their draft picks?
Well, because they've already signed two, so it was like 7.5. So I'd say right now they'll have probably about $6 million a cap. No, it'll be $7 million a cap by the time they get the other six guys signed.
425 wants to know, John, can you explain how incentives count against a franchise's cap space? For example, Cam Newton signing for the minimum but has $7 million in incentives.
Yeah, what it comes down to. Now, remember, he only played two games last year, and so that's why, I mean, you can build so much up that it really doesn't count against the cap. And so, like, for example, you give him incentives if he plays 14 games, you know, he can get this amount. If he throws for this and all that stuff. So, and what they're called is likely to be earned. And because we're not going to see the contract for some time because he can't take the physical. You know, we're not going to see all the provisions in the contract that he was able to get unless it leaks out, which it very well could. But I mean, at this moment, you know, it's 1.05 million as far as the cap. And, you know, after that, we'll just have to wait and see. But again, it's my guess is if it, and it, they probably gave him a 137.5 signing bonus. So it'll count 1.875 against the cap. I wouldn't be surprised if it's much more than that. And if that's going to be the case, you know, that money will be coming out of next year's cap.
From the 253, interesting question here. They want to know, which quarterback do you think is most likely to make their very first Pro Bowl appearance in 2020?
First Pro Bowl appearance?
Which quarterback do you think is most likely to make their first Pro Bowl appearance this year?
Kyler Murray, yeah. I think he's the one you put up there because, you know, he should have the advancement like from year one to year two. Maybe you can't think it's going to be as good as Lamar Jackson, but it's got to be in the same ballpark. And I think that, you know, he'll throw for yards. He'll throw for touchdowns. He's got DeAndre Hopkins and he's got Larry Fitzgerald. So I think it would be him.
360 wants to know, John, who do you think are the top three teams in the NFC heading into 2020?
I'd say right now New Orleans. Then I would go with San Francisco, and I would actually go with Seattle next because I think, you know, even though they lost to Green Bay last year, I still think that they're going to be that much more improved on defense. So I'd give Seattle number three right now.
Yeah, nobody from the NFC East jumps out.
No.
And the NFC North.
I tell you what, Dallas has got to be pretty close. I mean, they're sitting there with like 15, 16 players who have been to the Pro Bowl.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I think they're going to overtake Philadelphia in the NFC East.
Oh, I agree.
From the 425, they want to know, what is the percentage of revenue lost to the owners if no fans are allowed in the stands, or will it vary from franchise to franchise?
It could vary because there's still some chance that some fans can be in the stands, and you know, you have to go on certain numbers. I mean, if there's no fans in the stands, Forbes magazine says 5.5 out of what I count to be $17 million. The Players Association says it can be 3.5 million. And then, you know, again, some things can make up the ground. Like, for example, you know, with that, the tarping over the eight seats in the front row, they'll get some revenue from that. Then if there's no college football or if the college football season's delayed, they can start to do Saturday games and they might be able to get some extra money for that.
425 wants to know, how is the exclusive franchise tag different from the regular old franchise tag?
It's different because, again, on the franchise tag, and of course with the new CBA, it was, you know, it's a first and a third if you want to try to get somebody. And of course, that's going to be next year. If it's this year, it's a two first. But if it's exclusive, you don't have any adjustments. I mean, you can't get the player at all. And then because what you have to do then is recalculate the cap as far as the top five players in free agency as far as the quarterback position, you know, so you come up with a higher number.
From, let's see here, from the 253, they want to know, if Cam Newton has a good season, do you think he re-signs with New England or tells them to, I'm not going to say what they're going to say.
Yeah,
what
exactly. Well, it depends on what the market is for quarterbacks, not necessarily for just him, but, you know, what teams are going to be looking. I mean, you know, is New Orleans going to go with the quarterbacks that they have, or Drew Brees? You know, Tampa, and you figure that Indianapolis is going to probably do a second year with Phillip Rivers. You know, there may not be a lot of openings. I mean, you know, Chicago could be an option if things don't go well there for Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. So I think he would resign.
Another 425. They're coming in strong today. Shout out to the 425 bringing it. They want to know, John, if Drew Brees goes down again in 2020, how far do you think the Saints could make it through the postseason?
Right now I still think they're the most talented team in the NFC, and in a lot of ways they've been that way for the last 3 years, but, you know, bad luck or whatever it is has cost them the chance to get to the Super Bowl. I think they're a better team this year, particularly getting Emmanuel Sanders and getting back Malcolm Jenkins. So I think that, particularly if they can get the number one or number two seed.
Well, and they've got probably the most enviable backup quarterback, depth right now, mm-hmm. with Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston.
Oh, yeah.
So even if Brees does go down, I still think they've got a fighter's chance in the playoffs. From the 509, they want to know, John, why don't NFL players negotiate salaries tied to a percentage of the salary cap?
Because that's not permitted. I mean, it's like that's not part of the CBA, and nor should it be part of the CBA, because it just makes it too complicated. You know, because if you tie it into percentages, and again, you know, if that's something they wanted to push for, which they don't think they did, you can do it. But again, the problem is if you get a certain percentage for one player, and all of a sudden you get a whole bunch of injuries, that doesn't leave you any room, and so it's just not part of the deal.
And then from the 360, John, any special 4th of July meal you and Pat have planned for the holiday?
No, I have to figure that out for myself. Chef Ivan is coming over today to get her meals for the rest of the week into next week. And so we'll see what Chef Ivan is cooking up today, this afternoon, when he pops on over. And then for me, I'll have to figure it out where to go get some food on Sunday or on Saturday.
All right, John, that is going to do it for this week's text question.
Okay, and of course, that's on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Coming up next, our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time for our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, because you live downtown, what was your reaction this morning when you turn on the TV and find out that the police have taken back CHOP and reestablished themselves in the police station?
Basically my feeling living downtown, John, that it was about time is what I would say. They had, the message had gotten lost. I don't think it was about what it was originally intended to be. It's what happens when you have a bunch of different leaders and you don't really have a singular voice, which is always difficult to have. So I thought it served its purpose. I thought it, once it got violent, it needed to end. And I think I commend them for doing a good job of ending it today without any issues.
Yeah. Well, how close are you to Capitol Hill?
We're probably about maybe a half mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a while, they were marching to that West Precinct, which is about two blocks from us. So we've been aware of it.
Yeah. It came down pretty quick. I mean, they started at 5 o'clock and, within about 2 hours, before the show, it was like 23 arrests, because anybody that was down there in that area that didn't go and didn't move, they were going to be arrested. So I don't know what the total number is now, but within 2 hours, it was pretty well taken care of. And then, of course, then they were taking down all the stuff on the streets.
Yeah, well, once you started getting drive-bys and having people killed down there and shootings and things like that, you needed to put an end to it. So I'm glad that they did. And look, I mean, you look around and if you saw the news in Portland last night, they had tear gas and protesters going crazy. They've been trying to occupy City Hall in New York. So, the situation in Seattle is not unique. I think it's a tremendous challenge for everyone involved to try and figure out the right way to handle things. So, I a lot of people don't like the way they handled it here. I think that it's very, very difficult for anyone to figure out the exact right way to handle it when you don't have a coherent other side. I mean, you try and deal with the issues that the demands other people want, but when leadership changes from person to person to person, it's very hard to keep up with that. So I think it's been very difficult for all the municipalities to handle it. And like I said, Portland tear gas last night, New York having trouble with City Hall. It's not a Seattle problem uniquely. And despite the shootings before that, it was a fairly peaceful deal going on there. It wasn't really a bad thing. So I think they handled it probably as well as they could have. But obviously, you're not going to have everyone be happy about it.
No, no question about it. Now, and a weird story. TSN is reporting that the NHL has picked Edmonton and Toronto for the hubs for the NHL start. And what I'm wondering is, okay, how much difficulty is going to be getting the U.S. players up there and all that? That was kind of an interesting, I guess probably it's better to have, two in one country. And obviously, and NHL comes pretty much out of Canada, but it's like, I thought that was kind of an unusual decision.
Well, I mean, especially with the majority of the teams being in the U.S., but in Canada they have less of a problem with the virus. So if they're willing to take the American players, of which there are a great deal, and European players as well, you know, Canada has done a better job in general of dealing with this thing. So I think it's probably a smart move by those guys.
Yeah, and what I'm wondering...
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, by the way, John.
I know. How about that? July 1st every year. What's he get, like 119,000?
No. He gets $1.19 million. His last year of his contract was like 2,000, and the Mets decided that they're about to do a great deal with Bernie Madoff, really true, and so they said, you know what we're going to do? We'll defer your salary for 10 years. We'll pay 8% interest, and we'll start paying you in 10 years because we're going to make this great deal, and we're going to make all this money, and we'll probably just pay it off in about 2 or 3 years before it gets to the point where it would have to be paid off. Well, obviously the Madoff thing happened, and the Mets almost went under. So they had to wait until 2011. By that point, the $5.9 million had grown to about $30 million, divided by 25 years, about $1.19 million. And he gets that till he's 72 years old.
Wow. So what do you think of course, I mean, I don't know where he's living right now, but I hope that he's, you know, living in some area where he can go into a diner and a restaurant and eat and celebrate because we're starting to run out of those in some of the big states.
Pretty unbelievable, though. I mean, as everyone would generally concede, the best contract ever. It's paying them in spades, and it really is great.
No doubt about it. Boy, I tell you what, the numbers coming out of Arizona, incredible. I just saw that, from California to Florida to Texas and Arizona, they're all continuing to set records for positive tests, and it was like 28.3% on the positive tests in Arizona.
Yeah, it's not surprising, and it's Texas, like you said, the same thing, and Florida, like you said, the same thing. Florida, of course, that's impacting the NBA, where they have their hub and they want their thing to work out, and there every day there are more questions about that. It's we've talked about, John, every day, whatever the virus payoff or whatever the count is, seems to impact the stories of the day. It's put all sports in some degree of jeopardy, even though, you know, today's a positive day for baseball with spring training starting in most places. I think, you know, I mean, basketball has got all this stuff done, and yet, you know, they're conceding at this point that, geez, we're not 100% sure that we're going to even have a season. So, yeah, with those positive tests like you're talking about going up, it's definitely making a difference.
No doubt. I came up with a theory today, because, again, we had some Jadeveon Clowney news yesterday. Tony Pauline was reporting that his two favorite teams right now are New Orleans and Dallas, two teams that have absolutely no ability to sign him because of cap issues. And so it's like, okay, you scratch that. He talks to Josina Anderson and tells Josina he wants to get something done before the start of the season. He didn't say preseason, but the start of the season. And so what I'm wondering about, are we starting to see, you know, again, we're going to get the lists in baseball, the lists in basketball of guys who are willing to sit out the season if they don't get what they want. And we saw Chris Jones saying, I'm not playing if I don't get $20 million a year. Devontae Freeman turned down $3 million with Seattle, and he's sticking to his numbers. Could Clowney be doing the same thing, taking the position? It's like, okay, if I don't get my $17 million, I'm just going to wait until the very end and then judge things at the end of training camp and not risk my body and don't risk the virus in training camp.
You know, it's not a terrible idea, John, when you put it that way. And if I was in his situation, if I was able to get the money, I'd probably want to get it. But you know what? I mean, you're probably safer working out on your own and staying in shape and doing what you need to do and lifting weights and doing all that stuff. And I can definitely see the logic in something like that. Now, you know, I don't, about sitting out a season, that's a different story in football, is obviously for everyone. Everyone knows that football careers don't last as long, but I think that's a very reasonable thought, and it might be what's rattling around in Clowney's head is that, you know what, I'm going to stay clear of everything. I'm going to stay in shape, and right when training camp comes to an end, I'll make my choice and decide who to play for and take what I can get. So yeah, that's not a bad theory at all.
Yeah, because when you think about it, okay, so he gets traded last year, August 31st. That's when Seattle got him. And, you know, the Texans paid $7 million of his one-year $15 million deal. And so the Seahawks got him for $8 million. And, of course, you know, the way I figure it, that as each month passes, you know, he goes below $12 to $10 million, and it could be close to $8 million. That might be, like, if I have to do this, I'm not going to go sacrifice anything in training camp.
Yeah, makes all the sense in the world to me.
Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen on the Graz schedule for this fourth long weekend?
Well, John, unfortunately, I wish I had something new for you, but I don't. It'll be lots of long walks, lots of social distancing, frequenting our local restaurants and trying to get back to some degree of normalcy.
Okay, well, that'll be good. And of course, that's our Daily Dose of the Graz with Dave Grosby. Have a great fourth weekend, and we'll chat again on Monday.
Sounds good, John. Have a safe one yourself, okay?
Okay, I will try to do that. And, of course, as everybody knows here, we have no local – we're not going to be on the air on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so, Curtis Rogers, I hope you have yourself a great long weekend and enjoy everything. And thank you for everything this week.
Thank you, John. You and Pat have a great weekend yourselves.
Okay, and, of course, we'll be back on Monday at 10, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.